getting bloody back here, that inmate says. That's from a video allegedly sent from inside the Lee Correctional Institution in Lee County, South Carolina on Sunday night. Bloody because 7 inmates were killed and 17 others injured after riots raged in the maximum security prison for nearly 8 hours. Brian Sterling is the director of the South Carolina Department of Corrections. He spoke yesterday.
What we believe from the initial investigation is that this was all about territory. This is about contraband. This is about cell phones, and you've heard us talk about these over and over again. These folks are fighting over real money and real territory while they're incarcerated.
Guards didn't move to stop the riots for more than 4 hours, and it took almost 8 hours for the fights to end, leaving a scene of horror at Lee Correctional. The prison houses about 1,600 male inmates incarcerated for the most serious crimes, and on Sunday night, the state says there were only 44 guards on duty.
Hey, Jack, I'm waiting for you, bro. Hey, turn off.
This is The Takeaway, and I'm Todd Zwillick. And that's where we begin today with Valerie Borlein, national reporter for The Wall Street Journal, who formerly reported in South Carolina. Valerie, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
These fights broke out on Sunday night. Do we know the cause of the violence at Lee?
Well, the corrections director said in a press conference on Monday that gang violence runs rampant at Lee Correctional, which is the largest maximum security prison in South Carolina, and it houses some of the most violent felons in the state. And gang violence is attributable, and then just also really rampant use of cell phones to coordinate activity across the prison, even though people are housed in different dorms.
Well, what do reports say the scene was like as these riots went on?
Extremely grim. The scene was extremely grim by what witnesses are saying and by these videos that have been posted online. And the prisons department did confirm yesterday that there were bodies that were stacked up against some internal barriers, and just a really tough scene for all involved.
Well, Valerie, Lee Correctional has a history of violence. Parts of the prison have been taken over by inmates in the past. Just 3 weeks ago, a guard was briefly held hostage. Can you give us a sense of the history of violence and even insurrection at Lee Correctional?
Nikki Haley, when she was governor, famously toured Lee Correctional to draw attention to the state of affairs there and said, this is the most violent prison in the state. It was built in the early 90s, like a lot of prisons in the rural South, as a way to bring jobs and sort of an economic boom to these rural areas. But it has been, for the last decade, really understaffed and become an increasingly violent place. And there's a funny relationship. There's a funny thing going on with sentencing. The changes in sentencing guidelines in the U.S., we have fewer people in prison. You know, the lowest level in a decade are the levels of people in prison right now. But the people who are there are convicted of increasingly violent offenses. So what the corrections professionals will tell you is, look, we have fewer people in prison, but they're the ones who really need to be there and are quite violent in some cases. And then also this larger macroeconomic function of a really low unemployment. So 4% unemployment, it's hard to find employees for many jobs, particularly one as difficult as being a correctional officer in a rural town.
You mentioned staffing. You know, the governor and the head of the prison authority, who we heard from just a moment ago, place the blame squarely on inmates. And certainly inmates who cause violence are responsible for it. But does that tell us the whole story? What about staffing? What about people on hand who could have either separated these fighting parties or prevented the riot in the first place?
Well, to your earlier point about the history of violence at Lee, there have been a number of violent incidents there, guards being held hostage or dorms that are taken over by inmates for lengths of time. And you're talking about a dorm of 250 people that's, you know, typically on a good day, maybe staffed by 6 officers. And one of the things officers will tell you is, look, we're armed with pepper spray. We're not going in there with weapons that are intimidating, really, especially if we're badly outnumbered. And there has been sort of if you talk to corrections folks, they'll tell you that the incidences of violence in the past year to 2 years, in North Carolina, for example, there were 4 guards who were killed last year when inmates took over a work facility. Also last year, there was another guard who was beaten to death with a fire extinguisher when she went in to put out a fire that had been intentionally set in a cell. So I think there's a sense, or the professionals tell us that there's a sense of make sure you're in a safe position that you can walk back out of before you walk into a dorm where riots or fights are taking place.
So that might explain, and it does make sense why guards may not have wanted to intervene if it just wasn't safe in this situation. But nearly 1,600 inmates at Lee Correctional and 44 guards on duty, I wonder if there's a serious conversation in South Carolina, not only about staffing levels, but also the quality and the training of corrections officers.
It's a good point, and it was raised several times with the director yesterday and with the governor, who said, look, we've worked to get staffing levels higher, and the corrections director has gone to the legislature every year for years and said, we're in an increasingly dangerous place. And it's not just South Carolina. The Florida corrections director, for example, last year told the legislature, if I don't get more money for more staff here, I cannot guarantee the safety of these prisons for the people who are housed there and also for the people who are working there. But if you think about state budgeting, what we know is just the cost of Medicaid and pensions and other public functions have gone up so much that corrections often gets funded last. It's not as popular to fund as education or other priorities. That's what the legislators will tell you. So the advocates will tell you, look, prisons have been starved for a long time in this country, and it's hard to catch up in just a short period of time.
Valerie Borlein, national reporter for The Wall Street Journal, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Well, those deadly riots at Lee Correctional Institution in South Carolina were especially bad, but they're not altogether unique. Violence plagues overcrowded prisons nationwide, just as Valerie Borlein said. And we wanted to get a sense of some of the conditions that can go along with that violence in places outside of South Carolina. Amy Fettig joins me now. She's deputy director of the ACLU's National Prison Project. Amy, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
What's your reaction to this particular incident in South Carolina in the context of prison violence that I know you follow across the country?
Well, of course, it is a terrible tragedy and actually an extreme event. We rarely see an incident of prison violence where 7 people are killed. So there is a lot that the state of South Carolina needs to do to remedy this situation. But in terms of prison violence, both in South Carolina and across the country, there are some common things that we often see, and we're seeing here in South Carolina, too. Violence in prison has so much to do with the way prisons are managed and operated and, frankly, overseen. More than the prisoners themselves, it is the operation and the culture of violence on both the part of the officers and the prisoners that often leads to these types of situations.
And it can get complicated talking about responsibility when it comes to violence like this inside a prison. Certainly the perpetrators are responsible, but there are antecedents and conditions all over the place that those of us on the outside have a hard time understanding. What conditions in prison generally go alongside these types of violent incidents?
Well, exactly what we're seeing in South Carolina. Poorly trained, inexperienced staff, understaffing, bad retention, poorly paid staff, and frankly, a lack of accountability on the part of the prison. Now, Lee Correctional Facility, we know that there's been an increasing pattern of violence in that facility for years. The writing was on the wall, but not enough was done. And when we look at that type of violence, repeated violence that increases and escalates to this terrible tragedy that we now see, what we know is that that culture of violence pervaded that institution on both sides, so that staff were afraid and prisoners were afraid, and that becomes a toxic mix to what we see now, which is a horrendous loss of life.
Talking about this in retrospect is difficult, Amy, but nearly 1,600 inmates and 44 guards on staff reportedly on Sunday night seems like a recipe for guards to just easily lose control of the situation.
Absolutely. There should never have been that level of understaffing. And we know in South Carolina and across the country that understaffing is a huge problem. Because frankly, these are pretty terrible jobs. I mean, our institutions are terrible places to be incarcerated in, and they are terrible places to work because there is understaffing, there's overcrowding, there are abusive environments. People don't actually want to work in these places any more than they want to live in them. But unfortunately, what we've done in the United States is create this massive prison and jail complex that we don't want to fund appropriately. And the result, unfortunately, are violent institutions that make nobody better off. People return to the community worse off. And they're places that nobody wants to work because they're dangerous.
Amy Fettig, we're going to talk about reform, of course. And there's so much prison reform and criminal justice reform being talked about in this country right now. Are there any places, any institutions, or any municipality states that are doing this right, or at least better?
Well, I think there are some that are doing it better than South Carolina, but the sad truth is that across the country, prisons and jails face budget shortfalls. They still face massive overcrowding and understaffing and conditions that are both violent but also degrading for the individuals who are housed there. So it's not surprising that we have a toxic mix in this country in prisons and jails. You know, there has been some sentencing reform, but not enough. We still have tons and tons of really nonviolent low-level offenders who could be better served in the community.
And so that makes me wonder if the national debate in Congress and elsewhere on prison reform is taking this issue seriously of overcrowded conditions and poor staffing in prisons.
We need a more serious approach. And one of the things that hasn't been talked about is the fact that these institutions have virtually no public oversight, and it has virtually no accountability to the public.
Accountability in prisons. Look, there's a national debate in Congress on sentencing, but these are state institutions in South Carolina and elsewhere, and it's going to be up to individual states to debate and reform this system, if indeed that's what's going to happen after this horrific riot where 7 people were left dead in South Carolina. Amy Fettig with the ACLU's National Prison Project, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we've been asking you if you've ever had an experience with violence in prison, and a lot of you responded.
This is Brian in Santa Fe, New Mexico. When I was in Cleveland, I had a DUI. I did 10 days in the Lake County Jail in Painesville. Had it been any longer, I would be dead. I was completely suicidal from someone going through our cells every hour, all night, slamming the doors. That is why there is violence. And the guards just think it's funny.
Hello, my name is Daniel. While I was being held in the North Broward jail facility, as breakfast was being served, I was given a breakfast that was not mine. I had requested kosher food, but the guard that was overseeing the distribution of the food became very angry, and he attacked me, strangling me, pushing his thumbs into my eyes, and it was witnessed by everyone in the unit. I started screaming in panic to make sure that as many people as possible could hear me. And it was very clear that he wanted me to spit in his face so that he could charge me with felony battery on a law enforcement operator.
My name is Melody. I'm calling from Weymouth. And my cousin was arrested in New Jersey. He went in to sign the plea deal and was remanded to custody. He was there for about a month and was beaten brutally to the point that he was comatose. He had several surgeries, one to open up his skull to accommodate for the swelling of his brain.
LEO, that's felony battery on a law enforcement officer. Keep sharing your stories with us on the Takeaways Facebook page.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.